we're just a lot of talk. And now, ladies and gentlemen, for your further listening pleasure, TalkZone.com, Internet Talk Radio. Now, back to Talking Illini on TalkZone.com. Once again, here's Boz and Mr. G.
We're back, Talking Illini, Boz and Mr. G. Mr. G on hiatus for the week. Boz by himself. If you want to chime in, give us a call, 888-463-6748 or TalkingIllini@yahoo.com. And we're going to talk Illini with our good friend from Comcast, Chicago Comcast Sports Net, Gail Fisher. Gail.
Boz, how are you?
I'm great. How are you? Thanks for taking the time.
Sure, I am.
How you feeling?
I'm heading to the hospital right after this. I'm going to go have a baby.
That's terrific. we're making news here. A little rumbly in the tumbly, huh?
Yeah. So when she asks me what I was doing right before I gave birth to her, I'll say, well, I was talking Illini, of course.
Of course. All right. So we know it's a she.
Yes, it's a girl.
Okay, and I know you won't tell us names, but you got them picked out, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, no, her name is going to be Abigail Catherine.
Oh, how pretty.
Yeah.
And so. You got some Illini wear all ready to go to come home from the hospital?
Well, maybe not wearing it home from the hospital, but we'll get her geared up for sure.
Okay, well, I mean, do you need to go now, or can we talk a few minutes?
Oh, let's chat. if you get me riled up enough, maybe she'll come even sooner, and I can have an easy and fast delivery.
Well, there you go. I remember when my son was born almost 22 years ago, my wife and I were sitting in our little apartment on Aldine in the city watching a Cub game. In the summer of 88, it was only about 130 degrees for a month. And the doctor said, you know, just go out and walk. So naturally, we had to wait till the game was over. And
sure.
And we went out, and I tell my wife, you know, doctor said walk. You couldn't go a block without, like, dripping sweat and all that. But that did the trick. An hour later, we were down at Northwestern, and he didn't come till early the next morning. But at least we got out of the house.
Yeah, good deal. All right.
Well, so last night's game didn't get you riled up enough, I guess.
No, you know, I knew. I was hoping you were going to talk specifically with me about last night's game. I sort of saw it on and off.
That's okay.
In general, you know, I'm glad they're winning, and I think they should try to go as far as they can and win the whole thing if they can. I'm glad to see that they're not pouting and that they are actually out there at least trying to play a little bit, and they should have won these first two games. And so, you know, they might as well just prove something and take it as far as they can take it now.
Yeah, you know, you're right. They should have won these two games, but tomorrow it is not a cakewalk.
It gets
a lot more difficult. And I've watched Dayton a little this year because there's a local kid from Hersey High School on the team that my daughter went to school with, and they've got some players. I remember one Saturday morning at the health club watching them, and I'm looking at them saying, "Man, I would like to have this guy instead of some of the guys we have, you know?"
Oh, man, I say that a lot when I'm watching, especially the NCAA tournament. But I think you're right. It's going to get challenging now. And I think we're seeing that even with the NCAA tournament. There are a lot of teams in there who are good and playing some really good basketball right now. And that's why I actually was not upset that we did not get into the tournament, because personally, I just feel like we didn't do what we needed to do. And I mean, sure, can our team beat, you know, several of these teams in the NCAA tournament right now? Yes. But I think what we're seeing with Cornell and a lot of these other teams is don't underestimate them. These teams are pretty good, and they deserve to be there.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I mean, I was disappointed we didn't get in, especially because that whole Sunday – all of the so-called experts on TV still had us in. So I was disappointed, but certainly not upset, because, you know, 14 losses are a lot of losses. And there were, you know, we could have closed it out with one of those three home games at home at the end of the season. There were a few games at the beginning of the season that everybody harps on that, you know, a win here or there would have done the trick. But I'm with you. I mean, you know, once that's done, and, you know, you look across the landscape of the field, and whether it's, you know, the NCAA and the NIT, you know, the seedings for the NCAA, you know, maybe the top you know, eight teams in the bottom eight teams, their separation from the rest. But the rest, you know, there's a lot of parity and a lot of good play. And it's fun to watch as a fan, certainly.
Yeah, it was a great weekend of basketball. And so back to your point of watching some of these schools and saying, why don't we have a big man like that? Or why, you know, we could use a player like this or that. And it's interesting because I was having a discussion with another fellow alum, and he's the weekend sports producer over at Channel 7, ABC 7. And, you know, we were saying we've never had a dominant big man. We always get these, you know, European-style big men like Mike Tisdale. And, you know, he's got a finesse game. He's got a shot. But I don't, you know, I'm sick of 15-foot jumpers from my center, you know.
Right.
Why can't we get that post-up guy? I had to go back to Ephraim Winters, maybe.
Yeah.
Or Ken Norman, some, the last big back-to-the-basket style of player we have.
Yeah.
Why do we keep drafting the same type of big guy?
Well, and they weren't centers. They were, you know, I mean, Ephraim Winters was a power forward, and Kenny Norman was like a 4-5. But, no, you're absolutely right. And you know, we just had Dan Dockich on, and we were talking. And, you know, Tisdale is a great shooter. He makes that shot. But if he's going to take that shot, we need a guy or two underneath for the offensive rebounds, which we're not too strong on. And, you know, and Davis doesn't, you know, show that, want to be that guy, you know. Now, Brandon Paul, the last couple of weeks, has shown a lot of hustle and effort crashing the offensive boards. But I agree with you 100%, and that is frustrating because when you rely upon jump shots and they're not going down, you're losing that night if you can't pound the ball into somebody.
Right. You just have to diversify your offense. So, like I said, Tisdale's nice because unlike a Nick Smith, I mean, he's got a shot. He's got he has parts to his game. But then we're just a jump-shooting team, and we have nothing else going. And if we're not making those shots, we have nothing else to go to. Now, I was fortunate enough to see, because we do high school lights on our station on Friday nights,
mm-hmm.
and I was able to see this Myers Leonard from Robinson. I didn't know anything about him, really.
Right.
I was just like, oh, boy, here, another seven-footer who's, you know, not going to pan out. Who knows? But this kid's got game, and he is a back-to-the-basket style of player. And so he could change, you know, my perception of what kind of big men we're recruiting here. So he could be the guy who's going to give us a post style of play, hopefully.
Well, I was going to say the same thing, and I think our inability to get to the tournament this year, although again, I think we're good enough to be in, there just wasn't enough spots, but I think starting with this year's freshman class and Myers Leonard and Jeremy Richmond, you know, next year, we're seeing hopefully the turn of the recruiting philosophy that the coaching staff made, after the Eric Gordon stuff. Tisdale and Cole committed as juniors, which was eons ago. And then we were waiting on Gordon and that thing fell through and we've had some, you know, just negative repercussions from them, but hopefully this freshman class and then the next two to follow is the start of more consistent play, more consistent making the tournament, making the Sweet 16, and more consistent variety and flexibility in jump shooting and low post scoring.
Well, I certainly hope so because it's been frustrating and the season's been frustrating for me. I've had a lot of discussions with people about, well, what the expectations were for this year, and even if the expectations weren't there with the talent, then I'm saying, well, why don't we have the talent? And so everyone wants to point to next year's class, and I'm thinking, well, that's good, but I better not hear any excuses next winter about why it's not panning out. You're going to give me the, oh, well, they're just freshmen. You got to give them time to grow. Well, come on.
Well, you're right. Well, see, and I think there is a problem with the imbalanced classes because next year, if we don't get where we want, you know, we're going to be losing three seniors that play a lot. And the following year, we're going to have the same like juniors and freshmen again. So hopefully hoping this year we'd get to the tournament and make some noise. It didn't happen, but hopefully we can make some noise in the NIT. And next year with Jeremy Richmond and Leonard and Crandall Head and hopefully McKamey stays, you know, we go deep into the tournament.
Well, my concern, and I don't know how you feel about this, is Bruce Weber, is, I mean, does he have these guys? Has he lost these guys? Do we keep drafting? Do we keep recruiting guys with attitudes? I mean, I go back to Dimitri McKamey, and is Bruce just not commanding respect from his players? A couple of the incidents we saw this season, Jeremy Richmond, you know, big article in the Tribune about how he could be a disciplinary problem. Is Bruce going to have a handle on these guys? Are they going to respect him? Are we going to have the same kind of attitudes we saw this season, and guys just not playing hard, not giving it their all every game, getting into arguments with the coach on the sidelines?
Gail, that is the million-dollar question. And if you had the answer, you could make a lot of dough with that. If we've got a loyal listener on. I think he's in Denver. I'm going to bring him on. Maybe he'll have an answer to that, and we'll let him ask a question also. Sully Illini. Sully, thanks for calling.
How you doing, boss?
I'm doing great. Say hi to Gail Fisher.
Hello, Gail. How are you?
Hi, I'm good, thank you.
Yeah, you know, I was listening to you guys a little earlier, and brought some really good points about the big man situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got to thinking about it just while it was being discussed. I mean, who was the last good big man, I mean, legitimate big man, to come out of the state of Illinois, which is where the majority of our guys are going to come from? I mean, since the NBA draft got moved back, I mean, Curry's the last really good center, but I hesitate calling him really good. But I mean,
well, maybe Deion Thomas is that Deion Thomas?
That's even
I
back
know.
Further. Yeah, yeah, I mean that's even back further. But I got to thinking about that. I mean, it looks like to me. I mean, since Curry and maybe the what is it, Miles out of East St. Louis. Other than him, Leonard to me seems like the next one has come through. I mean, you've got the kid down at, the McFarland kid at Wake Forest, who's from, like, Lovington, Illinois, somewhere in the central part of the state, but he went to prep school. So, I mean, that's the thing that I keep asking myself is, where are we going to go get these guys, knowing that we can't just funnel JUCO kids in and out of here real easy like all of those other programs can?
Well, I think the JUCO experiment, you know, we could trash that. We haven't really been too successful with that. And I think the answer is that's, you know, if that's a position that isn't available here, we have to be a program that's able to go anywhere in the country and find a player that we need to fill a spot. Yes, we could get most of the players, you know, all the guards and wings we want, out of the selection in state, but, you're right. Now a lot of people, and I was one of them, and now I've cooled off a little. You know, Tommy Hamilton, the freshman at Whitney Young, I first saw him live over Christmas at Proviso, and for a freshman, I like what I see, but, you know, I'm wondering, if he can jump. I mean, for a freshman, he's terrific. He could shoot. He's got some. I've seen him with back to the basket moves and all that. Hopefully between now and the time he gets to college, someone will take him by the wing in terms of fitness program and get him into, real basketball shape and allow him to move up and down a little smoother, faster, quicker and jump higher. He could be somebody. But do you guys remember LaRue Martin?
Yeah.
That might be the last one. First draft choice, in some NBA draft many moons ago from Loyola. He was a center.
Well, and there's something to be said, too, about developing. And you might be right about, I don't know if the high school game is changing to where they're just not encouraging that kind of post-style play anymore. But if it's not going to be found here in the state of Illinois, you have to go elsewhere. And you have to be able to develop these guys. I mean, I look at Bo Ryan up in Wisconsin. He always seems to find the big farm boy type, Ryan Butch type, and gets what he can get out of him. Why, you know, I would even take that at this point, or a Robbie Hummel, or somebody that can at least give us some presence down low.
Yeah. Sully, you got another question?
Yeah, I mean, the other thing I was going to ask is, too, I mean, I wonder if with what Weber's doing, and I've never been the biggest fan of his. I really thought he was going to be in his head when he got here. And from a recruiting perspective, it looks right. But my question is, does it look like to anybody else that maybe we're moving more towards that, I don't know if I want to call it a Syracuse type model, but where we're just trying to load up with 6'6", 6'7", type wing players, which looking at Shaw and some of these other guys we're trying to bring in here, Miller, I mean, is that what we're trying to do? And just say, hey, you know what, if we stumble across the 7-footer who's 250, fantastic, and if we don't, then we'll just play with our athletic forwards and try and let them man up on a center from time to time? I mean, what does it look like the plan is with you guys? Because that's really what's got me kind of riled right now.
Okay. Well, Gail, yeah. Why don't you address that? Sully, thanks for calling. We'll talk to you next week. Gail, hop on that one first.
Well, so first of all, I agree with Sully. I'm not a Bruce Weber fan at all, Boz. You and I have talked about this before.
Right.
I could spend an hour on why I don't care for him that much. But I agree. We don't have any diversity in our offense and our plan. We haven't had a plan since the national championship game. I haven't seen any plan in recruiting whatsoever, and we do keep recruiting the same player over and over, and he wants to run, like, the motion offense and be fast and quick shooting and all that, but you know what? It's not getting us anywhere. You've got to try to do something else with it, and I'm hoping this Myers-Leonard is going to help out in that regard.
Well, you know, my answer, I'll play the devil's advocate, although, again, I still like big men. I still like and think that off the motion you could. As I said to Dockich earlier, I see so many times guys are cutting and they're open and they're not looking for the ball. And the guy with the ball isn't looking for them. And, again, you know, if jump shots aren't going down, you got to, you know, have a low post presence, pound it into someone who could score a few baskets with their back to the basket. That being said, you know, the 89 team, the biggest guy was Lowell Hamilton at 6'8", maybe, and Battle, was only 6'5", 6'6", at the most, and Nick was smaller than that, and Kendall and Stephen Bardo, they were all kind of the same size, and they made it work. So, And this year's Ohio State team, now they do have one big guy that could clog up the middle, but it's almost like playing 4-on-5. And, you know, Leidy, Buford, Diebler, and of course Evan Turner, you know, the biggest guy out of them is Buford, who might be a 6'8 skinny guy. So it can be done if you got the right players, and I think it's a combination, obviously, of both the physical talent, but a mentality also.
Well, and you say the right players. You know, I don't know if we have an issue with evaluating talent. I know we had DJ Richardson and Brandon Paul supposed to be pretty good, and they still, obviously, DJ looks good. Brandon doesn't look as good as I thought he was going to be. Evaluating talent. There was two choices, Dimitri McKamey or Evan Turner. We got Dimitri. Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could argue that he's played above his potential, but nobody projected Evan Turner to be that good.
Right.
In fact, he wasn't even in high school considered the better player over Dimitri. But some, you know, Thad Mata, somebody on that staff saw something in Evan Turner. And that's the kind of thing we have to be able to project a little bit better on our players or develop them better, something, because it's frustrating to keep, you know, maybe getting that name recruit and then he doesn't pan out.
You're absolutely right, and the jury is out, and the pressure will be on, I think, the next 2 years, the coaching staff, because they are getting the name recruits. We can't argue with the names that they've gotten, but now we'll see if they can develop him both physically and mentally. You know, I was thinking the other day, his Bruce's approach and the way he's dealt with Dimitri. Now, granted, it seems like Dimitri has needed some kind of dealing with, but the way Bruce has dealt with it, has that been the best way? Could have there been another way to make the relationship seem a little better and even get Dimitri to a better place than he is now, even though, you know, he's had a terrific season statistically for the most part.
Right, and I don't know if this is just, you know, the case of one kid who's got, you know, his issues, but because Bruce did deal with the Luther Head situation back in the day, and he was able to turn some guys who were heading in the wrong direction off the court, turn them around and get them to play. So I'm wondering why he's struggling so much now with the attitude with some of these players. And I certainly hope we're not going to have issues with Jeremy Richmond coming in next year.
You and hundreds of thousands of other people, because Jeremy certainly has the physical skills. He can be an Evan Turner type player with the skills he has, but, you know, the jury's out on how he'll adapt to college, adapt to the coaching, adapt to being more of a team player. Obviously, you know, Evan Turner did some right things and Mata did some right things. And, you know, maybe Bruce should talk to Mata over the summer and see what he did. You know, I don't know if the coaches do that or not, because.
Well, I don't know, but a lot of people like Bruce, and that's fine. A lot of people still think he's a good coach. What I hear a lot is, okay, so maybe he's not the best recruiter, but he's great X's and O's, you know. He's, you know, great in running the offense and all that. But I guess I'm not seeing it. I watched a lot of Illini basketball this winter, being pregnant and having to rest a lot, and I watched a lot. And when you can't run an inbounds play and you can't break a press, and, yeah, players have to hit the shots. I know the coach isn't taking the shots, but – when, you know, Dimitri is waltzing down the court with 12 seconds left and not, you know, you can't run a couple of last minute plays. What, that's coaching to me. They're not listening to him or they're not executing it, but you've got to be able to figure out something to score more than 14 points in half.
Yeah, absolutely right. Now, I will say this, you know, and it was kind of weird, but, you know, lots of weird things kind of come out of Bruce in the basketball office. And, you know, the week leading up to the Wisconsin game at the Big Ten tournament, he said he was going back to, you know, to how he always coached or whatever. And I'm wondering, well, you know, why did you feel a need to change? But, you know, since then, you know, we came out that Wisconsin game in the Big Ten, I thought, you know, is, you know, better than ever, pressing Wisconsin right over the half court line, not allowing them to get into their offense right away. Davis, I had never seen Davis play deny defense on Lure like I did that day. And, you know, they played a good game. They won. They took Ohio State to double overtime. And there does seem to be a little, you know, new energy, a new hop in the step since then. Hopefully it could continue to New York and into next year. And do you notice that also, or does it look like the same to you?
No, I was really pleased with their performance in the Big Ten tournament. And, you know, again, that's also maddening, though, because you're like, you guys can do it. Why haven't you been doing it all season?
Right.
And, you know, play to this level and do what they did in the tournament, and now they're winning. Again, I really thought they could really lose the first round of the NIT because I thought they would pout and not really want to play. So I'm glad to see they are going, and hopefully they'll keep going. And so I am encouraged by that. I would rather, you know, if they lose, they're going to lose to a good team here in the NIT and just have it be a good game. I don't like losing based on the attitude, the whining, the, you know, whatever they bring that's not their full effort. That's all I really want to see, is bring your full effort.
Right. Well, other than North Carolina, there are good teams left. They should be good games. You know, tomorrow should be a terrific game. I don't see us, you know, we never have blown too many teams out this year. I'm afraid if it's going to be a blowout, it might be Dayton. You know, prognosticators have us winning by a couple points and getting to New York, which would be, you know, good for these kids and in this program. And, you know, hopefully it'll mean something going into next year.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so.
Because, you know, we're going to have the same high hopes with everyone coming back, and Jeremy and Myers Leonard and Crandall Head as well, and Joseph Bertrand, who didn't get to play this year, is a pretty good ball player also.
Yeah, I am encouraged. I don't want to be Debbie Downer here. I am encouraged. I'm hoping they'll just finish strong this year and we can build on it for next season. And, you know, we'll have the players. So, but we are going to have to live up to it now. There can't be any more excuses
right
starting next year.
Absolutely. Gail, thanks a lot for coming on. You don't have to announce what hospital you're going to, but my niece delivers babies at Lutheran General. And wherever you go, good luck. And we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Boz. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Okay.
Gail Fisher, Comcast SportsNet, on her way to the hospital to deliver her first child. And we're going to be back in a moment, wrapping up the show with Bob Osmussen. Spring football starts a week from today. We'll see you in a moment.
You find the car you want at RizzoCars.com.
It's true. You will find the car you want at RizzaCars.com. Over 6,000 new and used cars, trucks, and vans available online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's so fast and so easy. RizzaCars.com is your one-stop auto purchase resource site. Build a new vehicle. Compare up to 5 vehicles at once. Access new vehicle reviews. Take a new car video test drive. RizzaCars.com also offers easy-to-qualify online financing, which helps to make your purchase simple and fast. Shop 13 new car franchises, including Ford, Chevy, Cadillac, Buick, Lincoln, Mercury, Acura, Porsche, Kia, Hummer, and Saab. So if you're tired and frustrated of driving from dealer to dealer, just remember,
you'll find the car you want at RizzoCars.com. RizzoCars.com.
Never do today what you can put off till tomorrow. Now, that's not exactly the saying, but it seems like people would rather have a root canal than do something about their finances. That's what AXA Advisors is all about, working with you one-on-one so you'll have a financial plan for the things you want tomorrow. AXA, financial protection. For more information, call Stephen King, financial consultant, 224-554-8053. That's 224-554-8053. Securities and investment advisory services offered through AXA Advisors, LLC, 212-314-4600. Member FINRA, SIPC.
The award-winning Sun Tracker Swivel Beach Chair is the only folding beach chair that swivels a complete 360 degrees. So whether you're basking in the sun or just watching the kids, you'll never need to get up to adjust to the optimal position. It's lightweight and folds to only 6 inches wide, so it's perfect for the beach, tailgate parties, sporting events, and more. Anywhere you take a folding chair, you'll want to take the Sun Tracker. To learn more or to order yours today, visit suntracker.com. Or call 888-786-8725. Sun Tracker, the ultimate swivel beach chair. A proud sponsor of Talking Illini with Boz and Mr. G. Check it out at suntracker.com.
The best in internet talk radio.
A mind-bendingly ingenious plan to control the universe.
We're building the best internet talk radio on the planet. TalkZone.com. You're Talking Illini on Talk Zone. Now back to Boz and Mr. G.
Boz here, Talking Illini. It's a beautiful day this Tuesday. What is it here? March 23rd. We got clear, sunny skies in suburban Chicago. And we got a great show going. We got about 35 minutes left. We're going to get into some football. Spring football starts a week from today, I believe it is. And before we get going again, if you want to join us with Bob Osmussen of the News Gazette, you could give us a call at 888-463-6748 or email us at talkingillini@yahoo.com. And Bob, how are you today?
Good. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for hopping on. You know, this just in, I hope you didn't make your plane schedule for Fresno yet, because they changed the game from Saturday the 4th to Friday night, December 3rd.
I just saw that. In fact, I have rebooked my hotel. Luckily, like you said, I don't think you can buy a plane ticket more than about 6 months out. So I had not done that yet, and I'm very happy I didn't, because I certainly would have not been going until Friday, and I certainly would have been coming back Sunday. So, yeah, it's good to know. And honestly, that kind of thing, they have to know a little bit ahead of time just to save themselves, because the team has to set up a hotel in Fresno to stay at.
Right.
And there are a lot of travel arrangements there. That is not an easy place to get to, as I've discovered. So, yeah, they had to do some work, and it's fine. I wish the kickoff time were a little earlier. It's going to force some
deadline
very
fast issues.
Riding.
Before we dive into football, I want to ask you quick, were you at the basketball game last night?
I was not.
Okay. Because a caller asked if we were going to be talking to someone that was there, because there was a time in the second half we made a run and made a basket, and Bruce called a timeout after the basket, seemingly, you know, like, why slow things down and whatever, and he subbed Jordan for McCamey. And you know,
I know why that happened.
Pardon?
I'll tell you why that happened. That happened because McCamey wanted out.
Okay.
He was gassed. I know exactly when it happened. I saw it happen. And he had gone on a several sprints up and down the court, and he was gassed. He's putting his hand up, pulling his pants and doing all that. He was ready to come out. So that's what they did. That's the only reason they called that timeout, as I understand it. And I know people were critical of that, but sometimes when a guy like McCamey gets on a run, he'll continue to play through it, but there's times when you need to take a few minutes off, and that was that time.
Okay, well, that's good, because there was also speculation that Kent State had a guy cherry-picking down court, and they were going to get two right back, and maybe Bruce saw that, and that was a reason also. But, you know, we'll take that. No big deal. Let's dig into football now. Spring practice starts next Tuesday, I believe, right?
Correct.
And the spring game is scheduled for Saturday, the 24th, 1 p.m. I haven't seen anything. Are they planning on coming up to Chicago again like they have the last couple years? Or
no, they are not. The reason for this, with six new coaches and a lot of new offense and a lot of new defense to put in, I think they felt like, I know they like that Chicago scrimmage. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a valuable process for them for recruiting. But I think the timing is not great, and those 15 practices in their minds this year are so valuable that they don't want to take one of them, and I don't want to say waste, because they're not wasting it, but they'll get more out of staying here for that day than they would getting on buses, traveling up to wherever they would go, and honestly, it's been a fantastic thing. They went to Oak Park River Forest last year, great setting. They've been to St. Rita, they've been to Lamont, it's been a great thing. And I think, frankly, they'd like to go to St. Louis area at some point, too, and do the same thing. But it's a time commitment, and I think they felt better to spend that time in Champaign, getting some stuff ironed out, getting ready for the upcoming season, than taking that day and working on it for recruiting and that type of thing. So I think it was a good call.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. And you mentioned the changes in the staff and all that, and I do want to go there pretty soon. But before I do, I just want to go back to last year one last time, because – you know, a year ago, everyone kind of, I don't know if the right word is, got excited or whatever about the hiring of Schultz from TCU and his 10-year record and all the statistics and the ball control and whatnot. And for whatever reason, that flopped. And I just want to ask you, if, you know, was there a rhyme or reason? I mean, how do you hire a guy with such a resume and, you know, it just becomes a mess to such a bad degree that you got to let him go after 1 year and not even give him or the whole organization and system to start working and meshing together?
I think it's a square peg, round hole type deal. I really do. I think that Mike Schultz is a terrific coach. I think he did a fantastic job at TCU. And I think, given a different set of circumstances, might have done a fantastic job at Illinois. But you gave him a lot of limitations. You forced him, here's a quarterback that you're going to play. He's been our 3-year starter. He's going to be the career total offense leader. You gave him an offense that he didn't really, I don't want to say didn't understand it, because he certainly understood it, but it was not his offense. It was not his terminology. And if you think about trying to do that, I understand why they tried to do it that way, but it just didn't work. And I think that Paul Petrino is in a much better situation. He's coming in and running an offense he's completely comfortable with guys he knows, whereas Mike Schultz came in by himself and was told, here's what you're doing. And Mike Schultz tried something, didn't work. He's got a job now, so I'm happy for him. And obviously, root for a guy like that, great guy. I don't think we can understate what a great guy he is. And it just didn't work. And these guys knew it probably fairly early. So I think in hindsight, they would have done it differently. Now they've got a guy they feel comfortable with, a guy they feel like they can win with, and a guy they feel like can move this offense.
Well, in essence, they are doing it differently, aren't they, this year? I presume both on both sides of the ball, from what I hear, and you could tell us what you hear, because I assume, like a few of the other reporters I've talked to, you've had the opportunity to sit down alone, maybe one-on-one with these coaches, and really dig deep into what they plan on doing. And it seems like, from what I hear, that, you know, both sides of the ball are going to have the autonomy to do it their way and just kind of report back to Coach Zook and say, this is what we're doing. Is that basically how it's going to work?
Oh, certainly. The head coach is going to have some input. Don't ever doubt that. But I think the difference now, between now and last year, is that I think in the offense case, it's going to look completely different. Okay, there's not going to be guys looking over the sidelines. There's not going to be any dice rolling by the quarterback like Juice used to do. There's not going to be any of that stuff. It's going to be a much more traditional looking offense. By that I mean guy under center, plays called, you know, sent in, and Paul Petrino is going to be on top of this thing, and so it's going to look different. The offense is going to look vastly different than the offense of 2009 and before. I think the defense will be more subtle. I think where you'll see a change on defense, I think you'll see maybe a more aggressive defense, if that makes sense. I know fans always clamor for that, but I think that you really will see that. I think if you look at Vic Koning's history, he's had guys that put up huge, monstrous sack numbers. And I think that he'll want to do that. Now, maybe it won't be one guy like he had with DeMarcus Ware at Troy, or some of the other guys he's coached. It might be a multitude of guys, or could be Clay Nurse could be about to explode and have a monster senior season. So I think the aggressiveness of the defense will be different. I think that people won't be as exasperated as they were last year when the corners seem to be playing off several yards at a time. And I think that they will cut into that. And I think Ron Zook's involvement overall in the day-to-day planning of the offense and defense will be less than it was a year ago. But that does not mean he won't be involved. He'll certainly be involved. I think his role now becomes much more CEO and much less hands-on type guy than he was in the past.
Bob, we got a caller. Greg from Highland Park has a question for you. Greg, thanks for calling. You're on with Bob Osmussen.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're doing great. I'm doing great, good. Bob. You doing okay?
I'm doing fantastic. Yeah.
Okay.
You basically answered one of my questions, which is, what is Zook going to be doing this year? Because, you know, last year, let's be honest, nothing went right. And so it's good to see that he's not going to have much control. So I have two questions. Number one is, what is going to happen with special teams? Have they talked about that? That's really a big part of the game.
That's a great question, and I think with special teams, I don't know that exactly that the plan has been laid out. I don't believe there's a special teams coordinator in place. I think it'll be parceled out amongst different coaches. Guys will take things they've been comfortable with. Ron Zook will have a major role in that, and I think with special teams, like with any other offense, defense, whatever you're trying to do, bottom line on special teams is guys on the field making plays. You can scheme it up all you want, but ultimately, if a guy misses a tackle or runs out of the lane or doesn't get his block down, then you're going to have a problem. So I think the bottom line on these guys might be to simplify everything. And I know people hate the muddle huddle or the swinging gate or whatever that Ron Zook runs with the extra point. I have not asked him specifically, are you going to keep doing that? I think he wants to keep doing it, but it might be time for him to say, hey, maybe that's one less thing to worry about during the season, during the week, and work a little bit more on just basic bottom line type stuff.
Greg, your second question?
Well, let's start at the top. Quarterback. What is the plan there?
Well, I really think at this moment, Jacob Charest will go in. He'll go into the spring with the lead. I don't think there's any doubt about that. He has played. He has had very good moments in real games. And that's an advantage for him that, like it or not, Chandler Whitmer has not been through that. Nathan Schulhaus has not been through that. Now, could I see somebody else coming out of the spring as the leader? Absolutely. I think it'll all come down to what those guys do in those 15 practices on the field. If they do whoever does the best, I mean, completes the highest percentage of passes, runs the offense the best, moves the chains, does all the things Paul Petrino demands, that will be the starter. There'll be no politicizing of it. It won't matter what you did last year, but I think Jacob's got a little bit of an advantage because he's been on the field, and he knows what it's like to be under fire from a Big Ten defense, a team coming after you trying to kill you. And I also think, and this has probably been understated a lot by people, but I think that they're okay weapon-wise beyond the quarterback. I think the running backs are very good. I think they go deep there. I think the receivers will be better than they were a year ago if they get the production they've been counting on from a Jared Faison, from a Fred Sykes, from different guys, and they got the newcomers coming in. So I think if I were picking a starting quarterback right now, if they had a game tomorrow, it'd be Jacob Charest. But I think if you ask me that in a month, it might be a different guy.
Greg, you said you had two. You got one more, or you're
well,
done?
I'm good. I appreciate it.
All right,
let's hope for a better season than last year.
Absolutely. Thanks for calling, Greg. Bob,
take care.
We're talking. Let's stay on the offensive side of the ball as long as we're here. And you know, you talked about Petrino bringing in different sets and all that. You mentioned some of the receivers. How many are we, you know, last year, this, or last few years, we've had like four or five receivers, no tight ends, one back, things like that. And it seems like guys were shuttling in and out every play and nobody could get some rhythm. Is that going to be settled down a little more? Are guys going to stay on the field for a couple plays in a row?
I would believe so, yeah. And again, here's Paul Petrino, who's a guy that's had great success molding receivers. That's been kind of the area of expertise for him. If you talk to people in Arkansas, they say he was very good. He made guys who were average receivers better than that. And that's what you want out of a guy. You want a guy to make players better. I think that he wants to have, he wants to have tight ends that he can play. He wants to have receivers he can play. Maybe not use 9 or 10, maybe use 6 or 5 or whatever the number is that fits. I think, honestly, if you could tell him right now, hey, you could have one tailback gain 1,400 yards or whatever, I think any coach would take that, and I think that will be the plan. But if Jason Ford and Mikel Ashour are equal, then they'll split the time up, and I think that's what will happen. But I think that they're very well set there. If you look at those guys now, they look in as good a shape as they've ever been in. And the receiver tight end thing is a little bit of a crapshoot at this point. They don't have a guy that's coming off a 50-catch season, so they're going to have to find him. But I think Jared Faison has a chance to be one of those guys. Again, A.J. Jenkins came back. He was a little iffy there at a point, but I think the coaches have high hopes for him. A bunch of guys down line. You know, we even mentioned Eddie McGee, who was certainly in the quarterback hunt a year ago, but now he's a receiver.
Go ahead on Eddie.
Well, maybe Eddie finds his way and becomes a factor as a receiver. And he's got great speed. If you get him out in the open field, he had that one play against Minnesota that basically saved that game for Illinois. And I think you can put him in certain situations and he become a very valuable guy to Illinois at this point.
And you know, I think Ramsey's pretty solid.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. I'm always going to overlook somebody and then Jack's the guy, right. He's a guy that is lined up to continue his growth and get better. And down the line, these guys, Paul Petrino has the funny expression, FTS, feed the stud. And I think we'll use that all the time. That'll be in stories. You know, if they have a good game early, you know, it'll be studs fed can be the headline or that type of thing.
I think there's a guy that used to wear number 9 that would have liked to hear that, huh?
Yes. He would have liked the first thing with him. And again, having watched him just in the pro timing day, he just was never healthy. And then the quarterbacking didn't help him either. But more to the point, he wasn't healthy and he got hurt in that Missouri game and that really ruined his season. And I think he'll hopefully have a nice long career in the NFL. But I think that these guys want to develop multiple options so that you don't just concentrate on Aurelius Ben. Once Aurelius Ben went down last year, you could sort of sense a deflation on that offense because they knew how important he was. Mike Schultz didn't miss an opportunity to remind people. I asked him before the season, I said, who's the one guy you can't live without? And he didn't say juice, and he didn't say any running backs, he didn't say linemen. He said number 9. And once 9, it was like a prophecy. Once 9 went down, then they were in big trouble.
Mm-hmm. We mentioned the tight ends. Now, we only got one guy coming back with very little experience, London Davis. What do you look for at that position?
Justin Lattimore's there, right? And that'll be a good guy that will...
Yeah, but he hasn't...
No really, experience. No experience, right. He's a guy that's going to get forced during the fall. And the other thing, they moved Andrew Carter there from the offensive line. He's going to help out at tight end. I think that's more for blocking circumstances than anything, but... Put a big guy out there and maybe throw him the ball once or twice. This will be, again, a different tight end situation. I don't think it'll be a guy that gets the ball as much as a guy that helps on runs, that gets them, does some of the downfield blocking. He's not going to be a receiver so much as he's going to be basically a sixth offensive line.
And, you know, you mentioned the running backs, and they keep getting better and better. We're pretty satisfied with that, but also we'd like to get Green on the field and get him some reps, don't you think?
He is a wild card. He's a guy that, to me, could really elevate the play of the offense overall because not only is he a skilled runner, which is obvious, but he also he's got good hands. And he's a guy that if you get him out in space, let him catch the ball 10 yards down the field, a linebacker trying to cover him out of the backfield is going to have a real problem. And even a strong safety trying to cover him out of the backfield is going to have a real problem. So they're going to get him the ball, and that's a guy that probably needs to be mentioned more. I don't think that Justin Green will necessarily ever be a 1,200, 1,300-yard running back for Illinois, but I think he could be a guy that gets that many yards in a multiple ways as a returner, as a receiver, as a running back. he could be that slash type player that they really kind of missed the last year or two.
And of course, none of that will work without good blocking. So how are we looking? Who's going to play center? Whoever that person is going to be new at that position?
Right. It looks like if you had to pick the starting five right now, somebody asked me this today. I said the two tackles would be pretty easy. It'd be Hugh Thornton and Jeff Allen. And then I think the guards, you're probably looking at Randall Hunt and maybe Graham Postick. And then at center, Tyler Stans was the guy there at the end of the season last year. He's an option. And I think that'll all get sorted out during the spring, I believe. I think they'll come out of the spring with five guys they feel good about, and then maybe a couple of reserves that can play multiple positions, which is what I know Joe Gilbert likes to do.
And who might those reserves be? Will they just be there to fill in, or would they be pushing for starting jobs?
I think everybody's pushing. The two guys to me that are the safest are Jeff Allen and Hugh Thornton. I think that they seem like the solid guy. They would be the all Big Ten candidates on that line right now. But I think Jack Cornell, we haven't mentioned for a while. He's a guy that's plugging in there. There's Ryan Palmer at the outside. Maybe he even thinks about looking inside a little bit. So there's different ways to go there, and they're going to look for 7-8 guys that he can use.
Let's move over to the defense now. Of course, the first guy everyone's going to ask about is Martez, his health, and where is he going to play? Is he going to stand up and rush from the end occasionally? Or, you know, what's the plan? You talked to Koenig about that.
Well, the plan is that Martez is going to be the middle linebacker, just like he was last year, just like they think he can be a difference maker, a little middle linebacker. They need him running around in the center of the field trying to stop people. And I think that's what they'll have him do. Now, of course, he's going to be limited during the spring. He cannot have contact. And if you're his mom and dad, you don't want him to have contact. You want that neck to fully heal. He's got some, he had a very major surgery and something if it hadn't gone well, it could have been career threatening. It's not. Everything's great. He feels great. I talked to him last week. He feels good about where he is. He's very comfortable. He's going to be eager to get on the field. And, but he, remember, this is a guy going into his sophomore year that was what the number, two or three tackler on the team going into his junior year. And then he missed that season. So the good thing for him is he basically got to sit, watch, and learn for a year. Didn't want to, but now he's coming back. He's a stronger guy. And I think he is the guy to me. He's the one area where if he plays like he can play, which remember, he was the top rated player in the country, really. If he plays to that ability, they can have a very changed defensive effort. They can be a much different team, a much better team. He's a guy that can get sacks, but also get interceptions. So I think he's the middle linebacker. I don't think they mess with him on that. That doesn't mean he can't rush the passer once in a while. Brett Miller used to do it all the time, and so did Jay Layman. But primarily, it's stop guys, get in the way, cause trouble, and make yourself useful.
You know, especially without Martez last year, the linebacking core was very, very young. How would you assess their, under those circumstances, how would you assess their play last year, and who do you see emerging as starters flanking Martez and maybe, a fourth guy that'll, be seeing plenty of action?
There's multiple options. I think Ian Thomas has earned himself some time. Of course, these guys are wiping the slate clean, so they're gonna look at him a little differently. But Dan Dish is still there, and Dan Dish knows these guys very well. So he will tell the coaches and let them know how effective Ian was at times. So I think he'll be a guy that's important. Evan Frierson will be a guy that's important. Be interested to see if Justin Staples gets involved. And then the question is, can anybody come in new and make an impact? And I don't know what the answer to that is. I think it's unfortunate they lost Eric Watts last year. He left after a short time in Champaign, got homesick for Florida. I think he would have been a guy that would have had a chance to play. But you never know. Some of these guys might come in and take a shot at it. And I think that they'll have enough linebackers. I don't have any doubt about
that.
Well,
they'll have enough, but I'm looking for improvement in quality.
Right. Well, I think Ian Thomas improved by leaps and bounds.
Yeah.
I think he's ready to. And I think one of the young guys, I don't know which one it is. I don't know if it's Staples. I don't know if it's Evan Frierson. But one of the young guys has to improve.
Ellington, is he still in the mix?
If he's an option, that's an option. That's a possibility. One of those guys has to make the leap. And if they don't make the leap, then again, the defense is going to have some issues. They're going to get oodles of time in the spring because Martez isn't there.
Right.
So there's going to be multiple opportunities to show that I'm ready to play. If you're ready to play, that they got the opportunity.
Yeah, I'm fine with Ian Thomas against the run, but I just thought his pass coverage, you know, he got exposed there, and I think opposing offenses saw that clearly and went after him.
And I think there'll be changes on the defense to make sure that Ian Thomas isn't in a situation where he's not comfortable. And make sure he's not in a situation where what you want to do, and I think what Vic Koenig has told me he wants to do, is put guys in positions where they can make plays. Don't put them in a place where they're uncomfortable. Don't put them in a place where they're going to get killed or exposed, like you pointed out. Make it to your advantage. I think the whole thing with defense that I think has to change if Illinois is going to get better is they have to, instead of being, they can't be defensive. It's kind of stupid to say that. They have to go on the offense on defense. They have to create turnovers. They have to get in the face of the quarterbacks. They have to be omnipresent. They have to be in the right place at the right time instead of the other way around, which is what the case was last year. So I think you're going to see a team that has to charge after the ball, go crazy. If you give up a big play once in a while, that is not the end of the earth. I think one thing that coaches always fear, that, of course, they hate to see the cornerback get beat deep, and it looks so bad. But bottom line for these guys is they have to make more of those positive plays for themselves in terms of forcing turnovers, and maybe say, hey, once in a while you're going to get beat. That's the reality of being on defense in the Big Ten.
And now how about our other Thomas? Is Miami Thomas going to be back full strength? What's his status?
Limited as well. Limited, very, again, no contact like Martez. But they're confident. I don't think they're overly confident, but they're hopeful that he gets back in the fall. Remember what a great start he had to his career.
Yeah.
After the Ohio State game, he looked like the next Vontae Davis, a skinny version of Vontae Davis, but he looked like the next guy. And while he has certainly had huge setbacks with both knees, I don't think it does. With modern medicine and all the work that they do with the strength coach and with Lou Hernandez, the guys can get back. In fact, sometimes they can get back even stronger than ever before. And maybe this was a guy that needed to put some weight on and get just physically stronger just by age. So I think that they're hopeful that he is a factor in the fall, and I think he has a chance to be. You certainly root for him, because could you imagine anything more horrible than you're recovering from one knee injury and you blow out the other one? It's just a dreadful thing to happen to the poor guy, but you hope that he's able. You know, I don't think he's been hurt before, so he comes back and hopefully is able to produce a little bit.
Yeah, in your mind then, looking at who the best players are, who would your two corners be starting and who would your two safeties right now?
Well, Tavon Wilson and Terry Hawthorne are pretty easy to me at corner. I don't know what else you do. There's some other guys. Miami Thomas is going to be, to me, he's the third guy in, maybe the fourth guy in. And there's some question marks with some injured guys. Patrick Nixon Yeoman, how does he come back? There's a bunch of different things like that. But I think Terry Hawthorne and Tavon Wilson are ready to roll. And then at safety, you got a lot of questions. You got Supostani. You got, I'm really very, very interested in Trulon Henry. Such an amazing story. The 25-year-old man is going to try and play strong safety for Illinois. 25-year-old ex-con who spent mm-hmm. 5 years in prison for armed robbery. Now that's not your usual story. And if you get to know him, which I have a little bit, he's an amazing kid. He's a kid that obviously didn't give up on the dream of playing. And Illinois didn't offer him a scholarship because he's Aurelius Ben's brother, or because he's an ex-con, or because he's 25. I think they offered him a scholarship because they thought he could help him, and help him immediately, and he's here. So he, to me, is the interesting story on that defense this year, other than Martez.
Aikens looked pretty good when he got his opportunity.
Yep, good point. And he's going to be involved. Garrett Edwards is going to be involved. There's a bunch of guys there. They just got to fix it, figure it out. There'll be extra time for the extra defensive backs. They'll play five a lot. So I think that they will rotate some guys in there. And remember, this is Vic Koenig. This is where he is. He's in the secondary. He is the secondary coach. And that's a major change. Kurt Mallory was the guy before. But I think you'll see his imprint. And I think they will, almost by the law of averages, they'll get more interceptions. They'll get more fumble recoveries this year. They're due to. And I think that aggressive play will make a big difference.
And of course, we got a couple minutes left, Bob. And again, a defensive front, a pass rush helps everything behind them. Is Brent going to make it back? Brent and Legit kind of haven't maybe blossomed or dominated like we thought. Nurse had a nice season last season. How's the line going to look? And is there Buchanan? I guess everyone's interested in seeing if he's going to be able to make a splash his sophomore year.
He needs to grow, which he will. He has already. Actually, I'm sure he's put on weight from last year, put on strength. So he's going to be a guy. You saw flashes there last year. He can be a terrific player. Clay Nurse is, I think, ready for a huge senior season. It's funny, I asked him, are you the Bandit? And he said, oh, I don't think I'm the Bandit. So the Bandit's that hybrid linebacker end guy, and I don't think that's Clay, but maybe it's Michael Buchanan. Now, tackle, yeah, I think you have to start with Corey Legit, who I've seen a couple times in the offseason. Looks good, looks like he's ready to roll. He's had some health issues, but during the course of his career. But if he's healthy, he can be a huge factor. And Josh Brent, who was at Pro Timing Day, not to compete, but just to hang out with the guys, talked to him for a little bit. He said he's taking a ton of classes and they're going well. He plans to be in summer school, but again, the flaw here for him is he's missing incredibly for the second consecutive spring, maybe the third. He's missing incredibly valuable time in the spring where he could be out there getting better. And instead of that, he's taking classes at Parkman, and that's unfortunate. But I think his plan is to be back with the team, and I think they need him back.
Wrapping up, David from Lincoln Park asks, can we win 5 games this year?
Oh, absolutely. No, they could lose 9. I think, really, again, that win total can go anywhere from about 3 to about 7 or 8. And you say, what? Are you crazy? But if you think about it, all these games a year ago, they've beaten Michigan twice in a row. They beat Minnesota at Minnesota. Indiana, Purdue were kind of toss-up games that Illinois kind of let get away. Northwestern's a game that Illinois is always going to have a chance and also always have a chance to lose. Northern Illinois and Southern Illinois, you'd think Illinois could win those games, but nothing's guaranteed. So it's just, to me, other than Ohio State and Penn State, there aren't obvious losses on the horizon, but other than maybe Southern Illinois, there aren't obvious wins. The Fresno game's nasty late in the season, so really anywhere. If you told me 3, I'd say sure. If you told me 8, I'd say okay. I don't know. I've covered this team. I'm going into my 15th year as a full-time beat guy. I have no idea ever what's going to happen, which is kind of what makes it fun, to be honest.
Yeah.
I go in every Illinois game. I have, if you're covering Ohio State, you have a pretty good idea Ohio State's going to win every time, or most times. When you're covering Illinois, you really don't know, and it's kind of part of the joy of it.
Bob, I'm ready for spring ball, ready to read your reports every day, starting next Tuesday. We got to run. Thanks for hopping on. We'll catch up to you next August or so.
Okay. Good talking
Thanks
to you.
Thanks a lot. Bob Osmussen, News Gazette, talking Illini football here. Spring ball starts next Tuesday. We want to thank all the listeners. Wrapping up, we'll be on next Monday, 2 to 4. This is Talking Illini. We'll see you next week.